Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
This day last week, I was joined in studio by two very impressive guests. I hope you heard them, Clodagh and her 15-year-old daughter, Aisling. Aisling had written me a very lengthy and articulate letter to share her experience of living with her father, who had bipolar disorder. And both Aisling and her mother were extremely open and honest in their account of what it was like dealing with their dad, who they loved, and husband, and mental health issues. If you didn't hear it, I would encourage you to listen back to it on the podcast. But that conversation inspired 31-year-old Hazel to get in touch with us, and she has done so. And you wrote to us, Hazel.
I did.
And you're here now.
I'm here.
We've gone from you penning a letter to you being here in front of me.
That's it, yeah.
What was it about their story that encouraged you to write to us?
I think their story inspired me because it was something that wouldn't be socially spoken about.
Exactly.
And obviously what I have to speak about would be not the same topic, but of a similar ilk, that it wouldn't be something that everybody would speak about.
Yeah, and so it's not so much taboo, but it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult to hear, and it's very difficult to talk about.
And to have to relive it all the time. You're 31 now.
I am.
Don't groan. That's still young.
Yeah,
I feel worried about that.
Yeah.
You should feel young. But we need to go back some time to just 2 weeks shy of your 21st.
Yeah.
And at the time, you were excited about your 21st because you were living in Portugal.
I was.
Your family were preparing to see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they were coming for a holiday, yeah.
Life, you had a boyfriend.
I did.
And life was grand. What were you doing in Portugal?
I was working as a holiday rep. I worked as a transfer rep for the airport tours, and then I worked as a kiddie rep. I ran the kiddies clubs and done the entertainment every evening.
You were the girl who we'd arrive in and we'd dump the kids with you at night time.
Yeah, I was the girl that found you your room first and then took your kids for a few hours while you rested by the pool or...
I'd had a beer or something.
Yeah, and done the mini disco every night and Superman and... Yeah,
that's a tough job.
Yeah, it was a tough job. It was long hours. They were 18-hour days.
Really?
Yeah. It's an awful lot harder than people would imagine it to be.
And why did you want to do that job?
I wanted to travel.
Okay.
And I think going away under the umbrella of some a company from home kind of just made it an awful lot easier on me, knowing I was secure. And then, obviously, for my mom and dad, they had that kind of sense of security then as well. Like,
so you were in a situation where you were living in a hotel?
Yeah, I lived in the hotel where I worked.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. Could have been a bit annoying sometimes because the kids would come rapping on your door at early hours of the morning looking to, you know, see the kiddie rep and play. But no, I enjoyed it. I made really good friends there. There was kind of an entertainment team and we all kind of stuck together and made friendships that I'm thankful that I still have now. So
you were there a few weeks and you felt something was peculiar in your room.
Yeah.
You were living on your own.
On my own. It was the first time I'd ever done that. Having grown up in a kind of real busy house with five kids, we kind of always had friends in, or, you know, the door was always unlocked. My mom was great at taking, you know, all of our friends in, and I was used to noise. So when I moved over to Portugal, I was put into a room by myself, like a small apartment in the block. And I found it really, really strange at first to get used to it, to kind of, you know, the little rattle of the kettle, kind of like you just get used to the noises of a place, to the quiet of it all. But I did, and I loved it. Like, I really enjoyed the kind of freedom of being able to be that bit more independent.
Yeah. Like, but you noticed something.
Yeah,
peculiar.
I noticed. I actually thought that maybe the cleaners from the hotel, they didn't clean our rooms, but for whatever reason that they had been in, I felt as if there was somebody had been in my room. I don't know why. I just did, and I made it known. Like, I had said it out loud that a few times that I felt
to friends.
Yeah. Just kind of got, I feel real weird, and I go in. And in fairness, I kind of wrote it off as me being nervous of living in the place by myself, and, you know, in a new country and everything. But hindsight is a great thing, and
Was anything stolen, Hazel? Or?
There was money taken. I didn't earn very much money, but for what I was getting, I tried to put a few bob every week to save for the holiday that my mum and my brothers were coming over on.
Yeah.
So I'd have an extra few quid that week for my 21st to maybe go for one or two beers.
Yeah, of course, and do what you should be doing.
And go to the water parks and stuff with my
brother. But the fact the money was taken suggests that there was somebody in the room.
Yeah.
So you had physical proof. That
I knew that it was gone, and in fairness, my boss at the time, lovely woman, she replaced the money and I kind of just wrote it off then as somebody being not so nice and you know, needing chancing their arm. So
we need to go to the 16th of June 2004.
Bloomsday.
Bloomsday.
Yeah.
God help us. Yeah. Well, tell us about that day.
Well, it was actually the night of the 15th of June that I went out with a group of friends just to a bar that was literally just outside the hotel where I lived. My boyfriend at the time played music in there, and for whatever reason happened that night, there was a little disagreement, not between me and anybody, but just between a couple of people there, and I'm not really a confrontational person, so I decided to leave. I walked about 200 metres into the hotel by myself. It's literally across the road. My mum has always kind of had a, you know, never leave on your own, always walk home with one. If you want to leave early, don't wait until somebody is leaving. So I was always very aware of that. But this night in particular, I didn't see it being a threat of walking. Literally, it was just across the footbridge into the hotel where I was living. So I done that. And I got to the room and I was a little bit kind of put out that, you know, an argument had kind of ruined the night. So I lay on the bed. I was fully dressed. I just lay there and fell asleep. And I don't know how long I was asleep for, but I was woke by somebody calling my name. So in the split seconds, like it sounds a long time, but in them few moments of somebody calling your name, like a couple of things were going through my head. Like maybe it was my boyfriend coming to apologise for, you know, the argument that he had had with his boss that night. All these things, but something in me, the fear kind of, it's like the blood rushes from your head to your toes. It's a really, really odd feeling. And I knew there was something wrong instantly before I even opened my eyes. I knew that there was something wrong.
You opened your eyes.
I opened my eyes and there was, I was lay on my stomach. So I kind of turned around and there was a man dressed in all black, in black tights and like what I can only describe as a leotard, and a black leather mask with a really big machete knife, I'd say about 12 inches long.
Good God.
And he was calling me to wake me up.
Your name?
Yeah, calling me by my name.
Did you know who he was? Did you recognise his voice? Or?
No, he spoke English, but he spoke English with like a German accent. Like he sounded to me of that kind of area, from that area. So he didn't, he spoke English. He never spoke of any other language that I recognised anyway.
So he's head to toe like something out of a horror film with a machete in his hand.
And a mask, yeah.
And what next?
I didn't scream. I don't know why. Something in me told me not to, so I didn't. I don't know if I lost my voice, but something in me just told me not to scream, and he had told me not to scream, so I just didn't. And there was a bit of a scuffle. I now know afterwards I had thought it was great getting my sculptured nails done the week before, and I'd lost a few of them in that scuffle, but I don't really remember it being something very long. Like he took me from the bedroom, which just had like concertina kind of doors, into the living area of the apartment, and there was a small breakfast bar. With it, like the one end of it was kind of stuck to the wall, and the other end had two posts kind of, you know, nailed to the ground. So he leaned me over that, and he pigtied me to the countertop.
What does that mean?
I was bent over the counter. He tied a rope around like my middle section, so I was on the counter, lifted up my knees, tied them around the bars of the counter, and then tied my hands behind my back. And then he set up a video camera.
Oh, good God.
In the room. Okay. He asked me questions all the while. That's how I knew it had been him there. Like little things that I changed around, trying to be kind of more homely. I put plants and stuff in there, and he noticed things that were different.
What was he saying?
He just kept telling me not to scream. He asked me a few times if I was afraid, and I told him I wasn't, because I'm a little bit pig-headed like that. But I couldn't help shaking. You know, I mean, that's, I was shaking coming on here this morning. I think nerves are just natural. Yeah,
no,
like, you know, so
totally
I think at that time, the nerves just caused me to shake. I couldn't control that.
So he tied you up as you've described.
Yeah. Yeah. And he set up a video camera, and then he took out a bag full of whips and chains, and he took out scissors, and he cut my clothes off from my trousers off. I had combat bottoms. Like, they sound horrible now, but they were all in then. A pair of green combat kind of trousers and a vest top that I'd had on, and he cut them off with a scissors. And he went about his merry way then, and put something like some sort of material in my mouth so I wouldn't scream.
I'm not quite sure how to respond to what you've just told me, because it just seems like something that you couldn't even...
It's very surreal. It still kind of is. Sometimes it feels like you're telling a story about some sort of Law and Order Special Victims Unit kind of thing. Do you know?
Or some awful film.
It's not something that you kind of hear every day of the week, definitely, but that's what happened.
Have you any idea, Hazel, how long this was going on for?
I imagine from the time when I did thankfully get out of the room, I imagine I was tied there for about 4 hours.
And he was raping you throughout this for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I find myself feeling physically angry listening to this. I don't know why that is. I should be more professional.
I'm angry.
That,
I do get angry. And I think more so like my mom and my dad and my brothers, you know, and my sister as well. They get very angry about that.
Why anger, I wonder?
I think it's because somebody crosses a line that they're not supposed to, really. That's just the basic of it. Like, you know, I mean... I was angry. I think I was angry for a short amount of time, but if you give your anger to somebody, you're always angry then, do you know? So
if you were there for 4 hours, trussed up like you described, and him doing what he was doing and filming it, can you even begin to tell me what was going through your mind?
I shut off.
How did you do such a thing? Or
my thing at the time was to figure him out. I know that probably sounds really strange, but
sure. How are we to know?
I said I'm going to figure him out. I'm going to get out of this. I'll not let him beat me. So what I did was, I knew from things that he was saying and doing that he didn't like girls. He certainly didn't like me. He made comments of my weight at the time, or how I looked, how ugly I was, how fat I was. It certainly wasn't. I'd say, in the madness of the time, I was thinking, oh, he just, this fella doesn't even like girls. Like, you know, why is he here? Like, and the nature of how he went about raping me, you would know that he wouldn't like women. Like, it was just, he was out to inflict pain on a girl. He wanted to, he was, I hate you, kind of, you know. It was more of a, I want to be with you, but I'm not allowed to be. It was, I don't like you, and I'm going to make you suffer for it. And I got that instantly. I knew.
Were you trying to think it through in your mind? Were you trying to rationalize? Were you trying to imagine you were somewhere else? Did you feel like fighting or submitting? I mean, these are all the things.
Yeah, I knew that fighting it wasn't worth it. He was not a real... muscular kind of a bloke, but he was a bloke nonetheless. I mean, I'm 5'1" without the heels. I'm not a very big girl, and I knew no matter what, I wouldn't have a fight against him. I would lose that fight. I knew that I would. And he was very careful. He had very thought out, that I knew that he had some sort of a plan that I didn't know of. So I didn't want to kind of upset that, in a sense, because I knew it might kind of send him in a direction that I didn't want it to go. Like,
what made you think he had a plan?
He was very he was very deliberate in what he knew, where to set up a video camera that it would hit the spot where I was. He took his shoes off before coming in the balcony door. That's how he entered my apartment, I know now. And he took his shoes off because the moisture in the air would have left his footprints on the ground. So he took his shoes off. So he was very clean. He consistently cleaned his hands. Thankfully for me, he used protection and consistently changed condoms throughout the whole time.
You could see this happen?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, all the time.
How did he know your name, and how did he know the lay of the land?
I really don't know how he knew my name. My guess is that he obviously done his homework on me.
Is he stalking you?
I imagine he was. I was told after that that's kind of the thought of it. To be honest, when you're a holiday rep or a kiddie rep working in a small resort in a kind of the largest hotel there, all the kids know you, all the families know you, you know all the local bar
it
people.
Would be easy to
you know, so people would know your name. Like, it's not as if you're just kind of one random person in an office block. You know, you're known because of your position, your job, and the fact that you're out there. Like, you know, everyone can, you're on show all the time. So it didn't surprise me that he got my name. What surprised me more is that he got into what I believed to be a secure premises.
Can we go to the end of the ordeal, in the sense that you're 4 hours there?
Yeah.
I presume you thought your life was over.
I did, yeah.
Did you think you were going to be killed?
I did. Genuinely, yeah. when he took me down from the breakfast bar, I couldn't stand up because the ropes had actually cut through the back of my legs. So, but he wanted me to stand up. So you're trying with all your might to kind of do something to not anger this person.
Why did he want you to stand up?
He wanted to bring me first back into my bedroom and tried his best to make me perform a certain act, which I just couldn't do. I was gagging and felt very, very like I was vomiting, and I just couldn't do it. So he then, that angered him because I couldn't kind of perform to the way he had wanted. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to take me into the bathroom, and he picked up the knife again. And I very quietly sat in the corner of the room, and as I'm talking to you now, Ryan, I just said, I'm not going in there. You've came here, you've got what you wanted, I'm going to ask you to leave. If I scream, there's 15,000 rooms here, somebody will hear me. So he took me, and my hands were still tied behind my back, and he knelt me down on the floor, and I was leaning over a small bench that was in the room, and he put a sheet over my head. And I really genuinely, honest to God, thought that that was it, that life was over as I knew it, and I could see him from, you know, the underneath of the sheet. And he just backed out of the room, put his shoes on at the door, and ran out into the road fully dressed in this get-up that he had come in. And in, like, again, in a split second, I jumped up, and at the time I was a little bit more flexible, and I could do this kind of twisty thing with my arms that I could get them over my head, managed to get the belts that he had used off my hands, opened the door, and ran through the corridors of the apartment block where I was living. And when I was running, the cobbles were kind of loose, so they clicked behind me. So I thought that he was running behind me. So that made me run even more.
Were you naked?
Yeah. I seen a lift then, and something in me said, don't get in the lift. You know, in the movies, he's probably in the lift. So I ran down the stairs, and I ran into a group of young lads from Newcastle, actually, who were on their way home from a mad night out on holidays. And at first I got a big cheer, thinking that this was a young girl kind of running through the hall streaking. But instantly, in fairness to them, they were real, I don't know who they are. They were gentlemen. Like, one took off his t-shirt and the other took off their shorts, and they carried me to the reception of the hotel, where I rang my dad's number, because in the madness of everything, it was the only number that I knew off the top of my head.
What time was it in Ireland?
It was 25 to 6 in the morning.
What did you say to your
dad? Or 7, sorry, 25 to 7 in the morning.
What did you say to your dad?
I just screamed. I just told him that there was somebody in my room, and he tried to calm me down on the phone. He has a good way of doing that. And he tried to calm me down, and I was just screaming all the while. The poor little night porter who was sat in the reception area was trying to ring police. I was concerned that he might have got into somebody else's room and all the stuff that came with that. So,
did your dad want to swim?
Oh, my dad.
Across oceans to get to you.
I think at that time, I think that circumstance changed my relationship with my dad forever. Unfortunately, you know.
Tell me about that.
I think as a father, I mean, I know now I look at my partner with our kids, and he's such a protective father, which is wonderful. Like, and it's so lovely to see that if, God forbid, anything ever happened to his daughter, that he'd want... I think it would make you question yourself as a father. And he has told me that I was supposed to mind you.
It's not his fault, though.
No. No. Oh, I know that. Yeah. I do. And
but I can understand his thinking.
But I understand
thinking.
It. I do. And my mom, the same. Like,
should have been there.
My mom was dressed up in her gear. My mom worked for the James Joyce Centre in town, and she was dressed up in her Bloomsday gear to bring tourists around Dublin City on the James Joyce tour for Bloomsday. And unfortunately, then she got the call to say what had happened that morning. Or that, you know, through that night.
Changed everything
morning.
For you.
Everything.
And your family.
Everything. When the police arrived back at the hotel, it seemed like hundreds of them, but I imagine, from what I know now, there's about 30 policemen came to the hotel, and I was brought back down to the room, and I was asked to strip off, and I had to stand with my arms out, and like in a star jump kind of stance, and they took pictures of me. Yeah.
Were they just doing their job, or could they have done that in a way that was a bit more sensitive to what you'd just been through?
I believe they could have done it an awful lot differently.
It's incredible to hear that.
Yeah, that was probably as after everything that had gone on, I think that would have been the more degrading part of it, if that makes sense, because parading yourself at your most vulnerable time in front of 30 strange men who are then taking pictures of you after being videoed by some lunatic in your room for the last, well, 5 hours. It was just, it wasn't something that I needed at that time. And I think it just, it turned off. I turned off. I had to.
Did they ever find the man who did this to you?
No, I don't think it was taken as seriously as it should have been.
Why do you think that?
I don't think they wanted to highlight it as something that had happened in a resort.
To protect the holiday industry.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of 1830s kind of, you know, groups sort of came to the resort, which I still believe they should go. I'd love to go back myself. It's the one thing I have a plan on doing. I want to take, yeah.
To exercise the ghost.
And just to go back, and it's a beautiful place. Like, Portugal's just amazing. And the Portuguese people were just, the ones that I knew and grew to love were just amazing to me. But the police, the legal side of it, unfortunately failed me. Yeah. I feel.
I'm thinking of Madeleine McCann now for some reason.
Yeah, that wasn't too long after, actually. Yeah, that was
the police there.
Yeah, do you know? Unfortunately, I find the system very corrupt, and that's just a personal thing. You know, I've had experience with them, so I'm just going off my own experience. So I don't want to kind of tired every one of them with the same brush. But the ones that I met basically came to me saying that I was a holiday rep. You know, kind of comes with the territory, kind of. Attitude. That's genuinely how they approached it. What was I wearing that night? Was I very, very drunk? Did I invite somebody into my room?
So who was the victim here? And who
exactly,
was the criminal?
Yeah. So I had kind of wanted to do the morning of the 16th. I went to the hospital. I was checked out. I was taken again into the ambulance by myself. There was nobody allowed to accompany me. I was taken to the hospital, the local main hospital. And I was taken into like the basement area of the hospital by two big, huge men, and I was taken in a wheelchair. And the first person I met there was a gynecologist, and he turned out to be the only person that of power, if you understand that, showed me any kind of care or compassion, I suppose.
And
when
did you next see your parents? How soon after the incident? Was it 24 hours?
The company that I'd worked for at the time flew, obviously being the time of year, the flights are all full, so they got my dad out on one flight and then my mom followed on another.
How was that reunion with your dad?
My poor mom, at the time, I know, and you know now from her telling me, she was sat on a transfer bus from Faro Airport to the resort. And everyone's singing, you know, we're all going on our summer holidays, and she's leaning up against the window roaring, crying, and that breaks my heart for her to know that everyone's on such a jolly kind of bus and she was coming to face her daughter who had gone through such an experience, you know. My dad was full of anger. He wanted to kill dead things, you know. It was just my boss at the time had said something along the lines of, you know, I love her like a daughter, and that was my dad gone, because he said, she's not your daughter, she's mine. Mm. You know, and he wanted this man found, which obviously I did too. The police were just very lax. My mum and dad accompanied me along with a friend of mine who acted as my interpreter to the FBI, like, I don't know what they're saying here.
Yeah,
in Portuguese, they take you to like the detective kind of thing, and they go through everything and taking out my clothes in a bag, you know, in an evidence bag. Yeah. And then they took me back again to the room where, when I got back, my nails were still in the bed, the bed sheets were still covered with blood. They never took any samples of anything, or I don't know. I mean, that's not my line of work, but I imagine I could have easily scratched or something. Yeah.
But you felt very unhelped by the whole process.
No, I.
What about coming back to Dublin?
It wasn't something that I wanted to do.
Why not?
Because I'd went out there to work, and I wasn't going to let him change what I was doing.
Okay, you're stubborn, are you?
Very.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes.
Getting that picture.
Yeah.
And that can be good or bad, can it?
Do you know?
Because if I was your dad, you know, I'd be.
Well, my dad made it kind of his mission that he just kind of randomly show up every 6 weeks.
Yeah. Or did he want you to come home? I presume.
I think he understood. In fairness,
he understood. Okay, maybe you got it from him.
I think he understood. If I'm fair, my mom is more stubborn again.
All right.
And I think, in fairness to them both, they understood why I wanted to stay, and why I wanted to see it through. In their heart, I imagine they wanted me home. But they knew that I think me coming home would have made it an awful lot harder on me. Mm. I needed to see through what I had kind of set out to do.
And you came home eventually.
I did.
You had a child with somebody that you were.
Yeah,
you wasn't
I did.
Interested in having a baby.
No, let's face it.
I'm kind of bouncing it along.
No,
forgive
no, you're
me,
fine. No, you're
because,
fine.
We're kind of getting out of time. But even though your story, I could sit here for 2 hours talking to you
no,
because
you're,
it's, you're so good at talking about it, which
Thank
is
you.
Incredible given what you went through.
Thank you.
Thankfully, you found love.
I have done.
And you have another child.
I do. I have my daughter. I had my daughter in 2012 in October. And
a man who understands what you've been through.
Yeah, I mean, I was single for a very long time.
See.
And not because, I mean, I'm very lucky to have very strong men in my world and very, that I knew, I know my brothers, my dad, my young, you know, they're all gentlemen. And I know that every man is not like that man on that night. So I thankfully wasn't kind of turned into this woman who hates men, all men, you know. I knew that it was just one man on one night.
And the reason, just to recap for people who are just joining, Hazel, the reason that you wrote to us with your story was because did you want people to feel less of the shame? I often find that people who are victims of attacks, domestic violence, sexual abuse, they often come out as the people as feeling worse than anyone who would perpetrate such a crime.
I kind of like there's a huge guilt around kind of what you would have other people feel because of your, you know, of your situation. Mm-hmm. And that's not something, it's something that I wanted to kind of bring to you because firstly, I know that you're kind in how you put it forward and your show, but I wanted to say to other girls, I know so many girls, if there's a room of 100 women, I guarantee at least 10 of them have been through something that I have been through. And it's only because I'm not afraid to speak to people about it that I've learned that, and of women that I would have never guessed. And they've gotten this far. They're very strong for doing it. And I wanted to thank them for standing with me. And I wanted to tell people to please, like, don't give the pity eyes. I know it's really hard, but remember that, you know, it does happen. It's not something that you just see on movies. That, like, they're real people. I'm a real person. I'm a real woman. It really happened to me. And to be kind to how you, like, I mean, people use words and sentences without realizing it. That would make me think of my time. You know, I don't want to say them on air. You know, horrible words that kind of would remind you, and that shouldn't be used anyway, but would remind you of if somebody had been raped, it would take them back. So just to be a bit mindful, you don't know what someone beside you has been through. And
I you are an incredible woman. I've only met you,
thank you,
25, half an hour ago, and your story and the way you told it and the clarity and the generosity of spirit for you to come on a show like this, and you're the reason why we're here.
Oh,
because
thank you, Ryan.
You tell the story that people need to hear, to be careful of our own daughters and sisters.
I mean, I have a daughter now. I was asked, Grace asked me, would I tell my own children? You know, I think the hope for every parent, for me with my son, as every mother and father would want, I want a rare, nice man, a lovely gentleman. I want him to respect women or men, whatever way he decides to go when he's older. But I want him to be a respectful man. And for my daughter, I want to teach her to respect herself and to be aware. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't let your daughters out or don't, you know, I mean, that's not it.
It's
just to be aware of where you are. And if you feel for one second that something is not right, go with your gut. Because my mom always tells me your gut is always right, and I'm such a firm believer in that now. I knew that there was somebody getting into my room. I knew that all along. And I'm not sitting here saying I knew it and I should have done something about it. I couldn't have never imagined that something so horrific would have happened. So, I mean, it's not that I'm trying to, you know, to do that, but I think to teach your daughters and your sons to go with their gut. And
what people are saying on the text, I haven't mentioned the text now because they were listening so intently to you, but apart from the bravery and the amazing woman that you are and a survivor.
Well, thank you.
This thing has melted with respect for you.
Thank you, everyone.
And I'm my heart broke listening to your story, but it's also lifted by your extraordinary
life
bravery.
Goes on, Ryan.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
Not for everyone.
No, it
not
doesn't.
Everyone could come on and speak.
But
the
I
way
want
you
them
have.
To know that it can.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I give myself, me and my partner have made this kind of little pact that if I'm having a day, I'm allowed to have a day. I've earned a day.
Better believe it.
So I say now, I give it a day.
Yeah.
Because after that day, if I give it another day, it goes into a week, it goes into a month,
it'll
a year.
Eat you up.
So I can't, why would I let him win again? I'm not going to give him the rest of my life, you know? I can't do that. And I want other women who have been there and know exactly that pain, because it's very hard to describe. It's like labour. You can't describe it unless you've been there, you know. But to women who have been there, you can live. Like, life will go on. It's a hard bag to, you know, it's a heavy load to carry.
For sure.
But it can be filed somewhere back in the little filing cabinet that is your brain, that you can take out every now and again. You can definitely give it what it's due and salute it as such, you know.
The Rape Crisis Centre, of course, available in Ireland.
Yeah.
For people who want to get in touch with them, they have a helpline. It's 1800 77 8888. You can go online and find them. Hazel, I'm indebted to you, and it was a real privilege for me to meet you today.
Ryan, thank you.
I really mean that.
To come here today. Thank you so much.
I wish you and your other half and your gorgeous children and your siblings and your folks the very best.
Thank you.
You're all very lucky to have each other,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, we are. I'm
just
very
from listening
best.
To you.
Yeah, I really am.
Okay.
I really am.
Look after yourself.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.